Languages through music. Languages through music. Languages through music. Languages through music.
So welcome everybody to the Languages to Music podcast, Africa special guest today, Iya Dede. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you so much for making time.
Hi, Desta. Thank you so much for having me. I really look forward to this project,
Language
to Music. I think it's fantastic.
I'm really excited, and it's so nice to be to have connected with you this year, one of the few good things of 2020, because I've enjoyed your music for so long, and it's one of those internet introductions where I don't even remember how I first came across your music, but yeah, just beautiful. And I love how you're so independent with the production, with the videos, with the whole universe of your sound. I think it's very inspiring. So it's such an honor to have you here today and on board with this project. So Thank you so much. Can you tell us a little bit about what got you started writing music, singing?
Definitely I started singing with family, I think. You know, it was just one of these things, one of those things. My mom, although she's doesn't seem, I mean, I never saw her as an artist, but she definitely had a real passion for music. Mm-hmm. And she worked in music, playing music on the radio and things like that. So she had a show. So I think music really became a special link in between me, my sister, my mother, because I mean, my mother would go, I mean, I remember that she would have to go to work. Mm-hmm. And I was really young, and this is funny because, I mean, if we're in America, we'll call Child Protective Services, right? But my mother has left me in the house. She worked shift, but she worked right across the street. The radio station was right across the street, so she worked at the radio, and she would leave me at home for the 2 hours that she had to do her show. While I was sleeping, and she would just turn the radio on.
Oh, so you could hear her.
So I could hear her, basically. And she was playing music exclusively. You know, she was talking and playing music. And I think this is honestly how I even developed a love for music. This is absolutely how. Because from a young age, music was my babysitter, basically. I mean, it wasn't that long. Eventually, she worked her way up, got a little bit more money, hired a babysitter. But yeah. I think that's where it started. It was always around the radio. There was no TV, so it was always around the radio. We couldn't afford a TV then. But basically, yeah, the radio was the central point of my life, just as many Rwandans, I think, you know. The radio was always the one voice. In the country. And I mean, we know what that did also, but basically same story here, but the music was my babysitter from a young age.
What kind of music would she play?
I think the hits, mainly the hits, because this was supposed to be a show about what's cool, you know? So in her time, it was what is cool. So it was a lot of pop music, from and Afrobeat music, be it from Africa or pop music from Europe or from America, whatever was hot. So it could be ABBA, it could be Bonnie M, it could be a lot of, yes, yes. So it was a lot about, so what's hot in music a lot of the time, what do we love about music is what's catchy, right? It's the melody. And the words that flow nicely on the music, you know, it was nothing alternative. It was not the alternative scene at all. So it was mainly about melody and nice voice and short and sweet songs that makes people happy. So that's really what I grew up on. So whatever was hot, I remember even Sabrina. I remember the song Boys.
Dun, 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 dun. Let's get for a good time.
Yeah. So it's like, I think I can go pretty alternative with myself, but I can make some very pop catchy songs as well.
Yeah.
I think that's where I get it from. It's like,
yeah,
it was all about, and at the end of the day, that's the type of music that brings people together.
Yeah.
When you look back later and then you look back at your memories,
yeah,
it's not always the super alternative stuff that you remember. Sometimes it's the catchy pop hit. So that's why I have a lot of appreciation for all type of music, including those very kitschy.
Yeah, no shame.
Pop sounds.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw a meme recently, you know, with parents kind of, you know, with some schools opening or not opening, and so the meme was parents of today asking, what are we supposed to do? Leave our children at home unsupervised for hours? And then it said parents of the 80s and 90s, kind of like, it really made me laugh because, yeah, I remember that. Like, sometimes you get home, no one's home, you're like, oh, I don't have a key. Okay, I have to climb the gate again. Okay. you know, what's the big deal? Like, children of today are soft.
I know. My baby, I know, exactly.
Yeah,
that's
but then,
funny.
Yeah, if I think about my little goddaughter, no, I wouldn't. But yeah, back in the day, standard. Like, who didn't do that?
No, yeah. I know. I was like, oh my god. But I mean, everything went fine. You know, everything is fine. It's but it was a different time.
Look at our character, our creativity, our independence.
I was babysit by the radio. Why?
Exactly. Exactly. I remember whenever I complain about being bored, my dad would go, only boring people get bored. It really stuck with me forever. I'm like, I can never let myself be bored. So
I know. But it's true. Like, growing up, I think we had, music was really the center, but... And you also really listen to music. It wasn't like skipping or streaming. You really listen to it. Oh my God, I'm starting to sound so old, but it was really about that. And the content was fewer, so you really played a song a long time. You know, I remember also Vaya con Dios was a central, weird, right? But Vaya con Dios was like a focal, her album, I knew it by heart. I knew Vaya con Dios by heart. ABBA by heart, a random singer named Cécile Kayeb got by heart, and Pierre Bachelet, because we had just a few tapes. It wasn't like you could just stream so much content, so you really listened to an album over and over again. Michael Jackson, like, but really those four that I just named, weird enough, it's like they're part of my family. They were, that sound was the link between, because every time we got in the car, put one of those tapes in and just played. Also a lot of French music, like Pierre Bachelet, who died. He had Didier Barbelivien, like a lot of French music as well. So it's very strange. Music was like the, you know, I had mom, dad, my sister, everyone else around, but music was a person in the household, also gelling it all together, you know?
Yeah.
And definitely a very really, important soundtrack, yeah.
That's a really cool way to think about it. And I really like kind of making the connections, like in such a small space, like Brussels, for example, is so eclectic. This whole kind of 6 degrees of separation is so real, you know? If I think of Vaya con Dios, one of the producers used to work with Zap Mama, and Zap Mama, Marie Dawn, when she was 18, she used to do backing vocals for Miriam Makeba, who lived here briefly.
Oh my
or
God.
Things like, you know, Marvin Gaye living in Austin for a while, and that amazing kind of homemade video you can see of him running on the beach in his red and white Adidas. I think it's just, it's really interesting to make all those kind of overlaps and connections. In the family, looking at music as a person, it's part of the family, really.
It is part of the family. And it's funny that you say that, because I mean, when Vaya con Dios is such an important part of my life, imagine me growing up in Rwanda, like young girl hooked on Vaya con Dios, singing all the songs. I had no clue then that I would come to live in Belgium, you know? I had no clue that I would even, and it's funny because I think Marie Dawn is also, Zap Mama is definitely a very, very key person in my life, because she, when I first moved to Belgium, the first link. I was offered a CD from Zap Mama. So I remember my mom had friends that live in Namur, and they had lived in Africa, so they had all these collections of statues, and I used to hang out in the attic there and looking at all these artifacts. And I realized that I had never really, growing up in Rwanda, it was just normal, but I had never really looked at African art the way it was being presented now here, because the way this person has put it together really showed a special attention to this thing, African art. So it's funny that the concept of Africa was actually introduced to me
outside.
An old white dude who had lived in Africa and who had basically a museum. Mm-hmm. And just the display of it was like, oh wow, I need to pay attention to this. What is this, you know? What is this? What is this identity, African identity, that I had never really thought about? But then I was like 12 years old then. And then he had a little, what you call it? I don't have it here. This, ikembe.
Yeah.
You know? So I used to just sit there and play. And I was like, oh my God. And how come I'm discovering this thing in Belgium?
Yeah.
And not in my, it's so weird. That's the life of the diaspora, right? And
then, yeah.
But then one day he gave me, there was a CD of Zap Mama, their first album. And I just kept looking at the cover. And then he offered it to me. When I started listening to that album, it was like,
mind blown.
So yes,
yeah,
yes, everything. So what music really vehicles is very important. And there was this lady, this group of women here who had, it's like they have encoded very, very important keys through sound. And that's why I really, really think music is such an important thing, because having been taken out of Rwanda, now I had this key to start investigating, you know, to start, she was like, look, asking me to look at myself in a way through the music, you know, to look at parts of myself that I had never even really started thinking about. So that's why I even almost like start crying when I think about it, because I really remember that time. So
I remember my dad had a cassette. Old school cassette. I don't think I even had the title on it. It just said Zap Mama written in red pen. I can see it. And I must have been 6 or 7. I would play that to death. I would just play that over, over, over. That and a cassette of Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, Chaka Zulu. So this whole kind of a cappella universe. I think the layering, the harmony is just beautiful. And it's really cool how you refer to it as keys.
Because I think Erykah Badu always talk about esoteric metaphysical stuff, and I remember her saying something like, you know, I mean, I think music vehicles a lot of things. Music is codes, you know, it speaks to our souls, it speaks to a sort of old memory sometimes, depending on your identity, depending on how much you're in touch with your soul, I guess, as you sing and as you vehicle something, it goes and reaches out to things, to other people. And so it's great to be able to identify people like that who have really awakened some kind of memory. That's what I would call it. Zap Mama definitely awakened some kind of memory, of old memory in me. Yeah. And she really gave me a key to be able to make music, you know? And I know that I did some, I was fortunate to be able to do a bit of background vocals for her. I knew all the songs, you know? That's why even like, when I had to audition for her, I was like, because I had listened to every single voice, and I was just, the way I was hearing it in my mind was like, it was not just music, it was like, I could hear all of this world, and it was just, it's surreal, right?
It's surreal. I remember getting a call from her. I was about 18 or 19, asking me to come audition. I thought it was one of my friends pranking me. I'm like, there's no way this is Zap Mama. Stop fooling. Who is this really? Have you read this book by Johnny Pitts? I must have it somewhere here. Called Afropean?
No.
He's a British writer. I think British Nigerian. And he kind of credits Marie-Dawn with this Afropean identity concept. And then he travels throughout Europe. And so you have a little chapter on Brussels, little chapter on Berlin, little chapter on Paris, on the diaspora there. Really great book. I'm a loan you that next time I see you. It's somewhere this mess of mine. And you reminded me of this, talking of this gentleman's house with the museum. I visited this museum in Yaoundé in Cameroon earlier this year, and it was called the Blackitude Museum.
And oh, I love that.
Yeah. And it was, you had to kind of ring the bell and pray someone was in. And there eventually was this guy who came to answer. There was no one else there. And it was incredible. It was just incredible, just full of masks and costumes, carvings and furniture, like from all over Cameroon, but also Congo, Nigeria, different places. And it was stunning, but not allowed to take a single picture anywhere. So I feel like, it was really kind of nice, because now in this day and age, it didn't happen if you don't have a photo, right? So being not allowed to take any photos at all and just having to be there in the moment and kind
take
of
take it in your mind only.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'll research that. But yeah. I think, it goes to show the importance of, I don't know why it just makes me think about some of the polemics that have been going on about African art having to go back to, there was a museum in Butare, in Rwanda, it's still there, an African museum. But to be honest, we were not exposed to our own art as much as just it being artifacts for people to purchase, you know, small statues and stuff like that. But the real meaning behind it all was not presented in a way where you go and study it. And that's what museums do, right? They value it and force you to look at it and start asking questions, and it brings you back inward. So you're looking at this thing, and then you have somehow the person who made this, and it brings this whole reflection as to what is it trying to tell you about yourself, because this is your culture. We didn't have that, and it's so important. Yeah. It's so important. But I know things are changing now. You know, I grew up in the 80s, late 80s, 90s, so it's not like, it's different now. Like, I think you even have the so much African artists. You have the Dakar Biennale, you have lots of places that you can now visit now that are putting African art on display. But the fact that we didn't have that, and it was here that some kind of spark of African identity was sparked, is very strange to me sometimes when I think about it.
I was discussing with Thierry, with Salty, about how, you know, because he speaks a bunch of languages, he speaks Kenya, Rwanda, he speaks Kirundi, he speaks Swahili, he speaks Uganda. And then I was like, what? I've known you for this many years. I had no idea that you spoke all these languages.
Me neither.
Like, and he was like, well, you know, growing up there, like, it's not really valued. Like, you know, you don't even, when people ask you how many languages you speak, you don't even kind of count the African ones, because it's just like, you know, everyone.
It's normal.
It's not valued, or it's not seen as like an achievement. You know, it's an achievement if you speak English or French or, you know, European language, but an African language, like, nobody's really bothered. So yes. I thought that was interesting, actually. Can you please tell us which languages you speak, and did music ever help you learn a language in any way?
Well, I don't believe I speak that many languages. I speak English, French, Kinyarwanda, and I would say that my Dutch has gotten a lot better lately.
Yeah.
For my work, I have to call sometimes, and I was like, just force yourself. So I'm trying to push my Dutch to a 70% level. I believe I'm like at 50% now.
Yeah, but it's funny, if you step away from a language, or depending how involved you are with it, it can really fade. I can feel really confident about a language and then just leave it alone for a few months and feel like it's withered a bit. So it's like a garden, you always have to water it, I guess.
Yes. At least if you be passively in the environment of the language to be able to keep it. Yeah.
Yeah. Has music ever helped you learn any of those or refresh any of those?
Definitely English. Definitely. And that's why English is so prominent in the first place. Everything we listen to, I'm sure 90% of the music that we listen to is in English.
Yeah.
Because African artists sing in English. American sings in English. European sing. I mean, everyone. Mm. So you have all this content and all these songs. And I was always very good at English in school because of that. It almost feels like we teach ourselves English because of how much English content we have, you know?
Yeah. Surrounded.
Surrounded by English.
Mm. Do you remember teachers ever using music in class, or was it more like a personal thing, radio, TV, outside, that you were using music as a, knowingly or not knowingly, as a way to learn the language?
No, learning English in Belgium, I mean, having our English class, I think I had like 4 hours, 5 hours a week, and it was very straightforward, textbook, chapter per chapter type of learning, type of teaching. But I think that I've developed, language is also, you have the words, the meaning of the words, you have the music in the language, you have the sound, you have the tone, you have all of that. And I think I was able to get to a pretty good level of English thanks to the music that I've listened to, because like I said, growing up listening to all these songs, and then you learn to sing them, you learn to pronounce the words, you learn the tones, the accents, the nuances. And that's why even when you are ready to start learning in textbook way, you have so much tools already, you have so much understanding of the language already. It's not like I'm not exposed to Chinese at all. And last year I gave myself a challenge that I wanted to learn Chinese.
Hey, I'll take that up with you again at some point next year. That's been on my list for so long.
I've tried giving up, but the main thing is like their tones. I don't have, and I watch Chinese shows sometimes, it's all in Chinese and it's subtitled. But it takes a long time to even start grasping those. What's the difference? No, she would tell you a word, and she was like, "Do you hear the difference between this one and this one?"
I'm like, "Nope,
nope."
Yeah,
I don't. But so I don't have those tools because I have not been surrounded by Chinese sounds from a young age. But when it comes to English, so easy.
Yeah,
that's why music is so important.
Yeah,
language to music is the way, I think.
I feel that too, because if you can't hear it, then you can't make that sound.
No.
Do you have a language that you prefer to write or perform in? Do you mix it? I mean, do you like mixing languages, or what's the different feel for you in different languages? Like, for example, I like French, but I really don't like writing in it. So I might, sometimes use a small text, but I don't enjoy writing in French. I think Portuguese is great for music because I find it so musical. What for you is your favorite kind of music mode language?
So for the moment, I think none.
Okay.
because I've changed my perspective on how I'm using language on my music and what I'm trying to convey, and I realized that it's funny that you asked that, because before, I think I used to write very complex melodies and try to pack jam lots of words in there, and the rhyme was important. It had to really be full and lots of saccadé. How do you say that?
Like staccato?
Yes, lots of, I had to try. I was really doing this exercise of trying to fit the words on the music. But I think if you listen to my album, Talking to God, there's mostly songs in English, but I think there's a lot of words. It's pack jammed with meaning and rhythm with the words. So it was all about fitting the words in complex melodies, and I was really enjoying doing that. Now I realized that I wanted to go back first of all to French, because French is my I'll say French is my emotional language in a way. It's my childhood language. French and Kinyarwanda, but a lot of French, because with my father, I always speak French, for example, you know, and with my mother, always Kinyarwanda, but for example, with my father, that I love so much, I always, so French had, have an important place in my life as well. And so I just wanted to explore that. And also because I felt like when I was writing exclusively in English, I had lost the ability to write in French, because French can be, it's a hard language, it's a complex language, especially if you want to write.
For real, after how long you study it, like literally.
Yes, so, you know, I got back to French, but I didn't want to go back to French in that sense of like, sorry for the word, but like ego, and I just want to write beautiful words and make it sound. I wanted it to flow. I wanted to, for the language to be at the service of my soul, because my point on this album was really to express something very naturally, to get out of the way of myself and just to go dig for those melodies that are there, that meaning that's there, but not meant, not mind, you know?
Yeah.
Just pure heart and pure flow. And French, it's hard to do that in French because there's so many rules, and there's also lots of, you know, the French language, you know, you have to like respect the French. There's all that in the way. But I think I managed to go beyond that. So in a way, I'm just writing, when I'm writing, it's really first what I'm trying to express and however it's going to come out. Sometimes I even just, you know, I mean, you know this, we all do yogurt when we're singing. And then I try to decipher what it is that I was saying. I don't know if you ever heard about those type of automatic writing or stuff like that. How do you make things flow? So I try to have that approach with music as well. And if it's English, it's English. If it's one word, it's one word. If it's a full text with lots of meaning and lots of rhyme, it's that. But I really, with that, I was able to get away from that, and that I'm happy, because now when I listen to my songs of my new album, before I never used to be really happy. Like, you tell me, oh, I like this song or that song, I never sat and were like, oh, I really did a good job. It's not like I'm sitting here in awe of what I've done, but at least I'm receiving what I've done in a more appreciative way, because I think I got I allow for things to flow more.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear this new album. So tell us more. So it was, you really wanted it to be a kind of more natural flow on this album, step away from language a bit. When are we going to hear it? When are you going to share it?
I hope in 2021. It's really something that it's one of those challenges. Because it's been hard to get back to music, and to your last question, even writing had become hard and for a while and everything. So I'm working not hard at it. I'm working. When I'm flowing at it.
Good.
I'm flowing. I'm
Good.
Not flowing at it. I'm flowing at it. But definitely, it's pretty advanced, and definitely 2021. And it's just something that I really want to do, you know?
That's great. I'm going to adopt that phrase, I'm flowing at it, because I've been working on a book for about a million years, giving myself a hard time for not having it done.
That's flowing
at it. Yeah, when people ask me, I'm like, yeah, don't watch that. I'm flowing at it. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I think in 2020, there's been a lot of pressure of like, you know, oh, you have to use this time, learn 5 languages, write 5 books, record 5 albums. People are just trying to get by and, you know, survive and stay happy. Everyone just needs to sit down. I can't wait to hear it. Are there any other languages besides Chinese, like you mentioned, that you'd like to learn? Any African languages in particular? Any other languages that intrigue you?
Definitely Yoruba. I love the Nigerian culture. I think the Nigerian people are so, you know, first of all, the way they flow between their Nigerian culture and their Western culture, because they're so well-traveled, so educated, and it's just so effortless, right? And I think there must be a lot of wealth in understanding ourselves as Black people as well through learning languages like that, such old languages like that. So I think a language like Yoruba, I regret that I don't speak better Swahili because my father speaks excellent Swahili.
Okay.
And growing up in Rwanda, I was starting to get it because it was around me, like I said, it was around. So I was starting to get it, but of course, total disconnect and totally done. And I know that there's some very great music, like old jazz in Swahili language that is so beautiful.
Send me that,
you know?
Please, hook me up.
And I know that I just got a sense growing up that Swahili was a very exquisite language, that it was, people sometimes we look at African languages as some kind of, we don't put them on the same pedestal as we put, you know, French and the deaf, but I think Swahili is also very, 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 and I got that from my father because he used to always talk about the difference between the Swahili that you hear spoken in Nyamirambo, for example, which was a popular neighborhood in Rwanda where lots of people spoke Swahili, and the exquisite Swahili that's spoken in Tanzania, for example. And then he starts
Everyone
speaking.
Talks about this Tanzanian Swahili. Everybody. I took a few lessons this year, and my Kenyan teacher, she said, I'll teach you as best I can, but
we're not going to reach the Tanzanian
level. Like, listen, if you really want to get to the temple of Swahili, the Kung Fu master level, you need to go to Tanzania. I said, okay.
Yeah.
Don't tell me twice. I'd go to Tanzania tomorrow if I could.
But this gave me the impression that Swahili was, there are levels of Swahili, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I could even also just get to a better level in Kinyarwanda, because there are levels of Kinyarwanda as well. There's the Kinyarwanda that we can speak every day. And then when you listen to some of our poetry or some of the songs, sometimes it sounds like it's Kinyarwanda.
Yeah.
You know it's Kinyarwanda, but you don't know what the hell is being said. Because it's so advanced and it's a very poetic language. So maybe I should even start by pushing my Kinyarwanda to a more exquisite poetic level.
Exquisite. Good word.
You know?
Exquisite. That's what I aim for. One day someone's going to ask me, so Desta, how's your Tigrinya? I'm going to say, exquisite. It's exquisite.
You know, let's get our African language to let's get our level to exquisite first, you know, in all these languages, because I think, I don't know enough about my own language as well. I mean, I speak it, but I don't think I know enough.
Yeah.
I don't know half of it.
We can always do better. But that's such a much better standard to this than this dry European framework. A1, B1, C1. That's not the kind of thing
we're
aiming
right?
for. Good, better, exquisite.
I love that.
Oh, well, it's gonna be the new standard, the new measurement, I think. We're gonna shake it up a bit. So with your travels and all the different places you've lived, how has each kind of hometown influenced you, either musically or language-wise? As an example, you know, here it's kind of standard for people to speak 2 languages, 3 languages, 4 languages.
Mm-hmm.
But I graduated from high school here, and I didn't really think much about, even though I wasn't, my French was even worse, and I didn't really kind of check for it. It wasn't until I got to London and I had a couple other languages, and my Londoner friends were like, oh my god, you speak so many languages. And no one ever in Belgium had gone, wow, this is, you speak so many languages ever, because everyone speaks but my Londoner friends, because, you know, speaking English, I think a lot of English people don't feel the need to learn another language. I don't think it's even necessary to do in high school. I don't think there's any pressure to take another language. So my Londoner friends were really like, wow. And that was the first time I thought, oh, this is a thing. Oh, cool. But here I never thought that, because that's a kind of standard thing here. So
yeah,
have your temporary hometowns had a particular influence on either your music or your language learning?
I think, okay, for example, in Rwanda, I lived in Rwanda as a child and also briefly in 2014 and 2015. And I think the same there, it's normal for everyone to speak at least two languages. You know, everybody speaks either Kinyarwanda in English, Kinyarwanda in French. And then with the diaspora and a lot of people going back, they might speak crazy languages like, I don't know, Danish, Swedish, German.
Yeah, I mean,
everybody has all those, many people do. So there, I think it highlights the importance of Rwanda, and they really value the Kinyarwanda language. So if you do speak good Kinyarwanda, I think it's good, you know? So it made me wanna, of course, not just leave the realm of just the daily Kinyarwanda, just conversating, you know, casual speak, to maybe, like I was saying, what is actually being said in the music and the, you know, and it got me to learn more also about words like, you know, like how do you say computer in Kinyarwanda? You know, like if you go on the Rwandan website, like, okay, I was checking this, I was at Rwandan embassy and I was trying to apply for the East African passport. I mean, I was applying for it. And so she was like, oh, you gotta go online and do it. But you know, the website is all in Kinyarwanda. And I thought that was so cool. You know, it's a fully in Kinyarwanda. And then, right. And so Kinyarwanda is so long, you know, some of the words like computer, like mudasobya. I feel like these are words that I've learned recently, because growing up, I don't think saying the word computer really, you know, it never came up to me. It was like ordinateur, we said in French, you know. But there is Kinyarwanda has very few added words from foreign words to explain some Western concept. You know what I mean? Everything can be said in Kinyarwanda, including technological technology terms. Everything can be said in Kinyarwanda, and you can see that on our website, for example. And I thought it was interesting when I'm clicking on the website and I'm applying, and I have to be like, okay, which one is it? And so it's teaching me. So basically, it's giving me extra tools and extra words in Kinyarwanda that are very 2020. So Kinyarwanda has moved from, it's moved in the 21st century, basically, you know, it's going with the 21st century. So yeah, we are saying everything. We're not borrowing from other languages to say things that are maybe related to technology. We are having our own words, and this is maybe normal for everyone else, but for me, it's something that I've noticed. I was like, oh wow, I love that, you know.
I love that. Right. I think I remember when I used to live in Brazil, there was a kind of pushback against it, because English was really infiltrating, so people were saying, you know, email or website, but you know, using the English words. And I remember like these posters being put up around town, kind of just like, you know, it's not computer, it's, you know, it's not email, it's, so there was a kind of pushback against it. So I think that's really important.
I really noticed that. I was like, this is so cool, because even in Japanese borrow a lot of words. Like I'll watch some Korean shows sometimes, and they love to drop some English words in there because it sounds, and I was like, wow, we're not doing that at all. I find that pretty cool, you know.
I think that's really refreshing. I mean I've been studying Thai also, lots of borrowed words, and I think it's refreshing. I think also, I mean, I've only been to Rwanda once, I loved it. I get the impression that it's super high tech. I remember seeing this kind of article on AI and like robots being developed. A friend of mine was saying that during the whole corona thing, that they were using drones to tell people to go back, stay home. It's crazy. Like, you know, I think Rwanda is really leading the way, and I think it's Kigali is the number one city for all kinds of conferences, like for
the
continent. Lots of nations.
That during corona, when they announced the end of the last confinement, and there was a list of countries that were now allowed to travel, Rwanda was the only African country on the list. I was like, oh wow, look at that. That's pretty. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised that any African country is doing good. I think we have to get to a level where we shouldn't be surprised. It's just like, why not, you know? But for the moment, it's worth noticing. We're still noticing, like, you know, wow, it's pretty you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, considering how many obstacles and meddling European countries that still, I was so angry. I think, was it this year? The Ethiopia asked for some of its, you know, treasures back from the British Museum. And the British Museum was like, no, but we'll loan it to you. Ah, like what? You came, you stole all this stuff, and now you're going to let us borrow it back? Yeah, so...
It's super important, because it's something that the kids need to be, like, people in every country needs to be able to learn from their culture. So they need that. I mean, it's a matter of life and death, really, you know. Like I said, I told you my story earlier, like, how am I only becoming acquainted with myself through museum abroad, and that are probably maybe not telling my full story, and not, you know, I should. So it's very, very important. I mean, some people are doing that fight, but I think, yeah, hopefully it will be a reality in, you know, soon.
Yeah.
And then I think you said, what was, I think when it comes to America, I think about the languages, in America, they really valued, at least in cities like New York, where I've lived for like 9 years, they really love the African identity, you know. So you speaking an African language, you having an African name.
Yeah.
My God. They love it. It's like some, the African American community feels like, oh, they're it's like they're touching their roots directly right in front of them. I think they have such an emotional connection to it. So my name, Iyadede, again, I was always like, yeah, it's my name, but it's through my African American friends, because I saw how much it meant to them. Your grandmother gave you that name. Oh my God, what does it mean? I was like, yeah, what does it mean? You know, and I mean, and I realized that I didn't never used to highlight the value like that. So it's through that. So in that way, they have influenced me to
value.
I guess to have some, yeah, to value it even more.
Yeah, it wasn't until I went to Jamaica that I really appreciated my name, because Haile is like Smith. Everybody's called Haile in Ethiopia and Eritrea. Like, literally, Haile's are a dime a dozen. And then when I was
in Kingston,
people were like, I mean, yeah, all of us are like, Haile is a super common name. Like, nobody cares when you're called Haile. Everyone's called Haile. And then when I was in Jamaica in 2015, people were like, what? Daughter of God, and I was just like,
yeah.
And my dad told me, like, in the 70s, he lived in Jamaica for a year, and he was saying, yeah, you know, sometimes I would open my door in the morning and there would be gifts, there'd be Blue Mountain coffee, there'd be, you know, spectacular rum or weed or just stuff, gifts left to him, because his last name was Haile, and, you know, with the Rastafari, that's such a big deal. And even though Haile Selassie chose his name to mean power of the Trinity, but that translation, his name, he was Rastafari.
It means power of the Trinity.
So Haile
that's
is
beautiful
power, and Tafari, Selassie is Trinity. So his name was Tafari, which is also a common, like, boy's name. He who is respected, Tafari, Mekwana. And then when he became emperor, he chose Haile Selassie, because he was very Christian. He chose his name to be the power of the Trinity.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
So it was really funny to feel like I had the most common Abisha name on the planet. Then be in Kingston and be like, oh, yeah.
And then it's like,
I am a princess somewhere. I don't know.
But then it reminds you of the power of of that name. Actually, it could be common, but, you know, it's like it brings you back to that when you, I think it's so, so nice. That's why traveling is so cool.
It is. And, you know, the UN have declared 2015 to 2024 the international decade of people of African descent. I didn't find this out until like 2 minutes ago. I was like, how'd they keep this so quiet? Let's rewind.
My God, we need to start over.
Exactly. So that's why I'm doing full on Africa focus with Languages Through Music, and really want to kind of co-create as many resources and workshops and podcasts as possible with amazing artists, educators, everywhere.
I think it's a beautiful project, and I support you 100%.
Oh,
no, it's really, I mean, the visibility that you can bring to languages, the resources that can be created for, I mean, let's be honest, we, the diaspora, will always be in all countries. It's not like, you know, so we need to build resources to be able to teach kids languages, and African languages. So I think it's such an important work, and I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you so much, and I'm so glad that I'm going to be working with you, and we'll be discovering stuff together. Just as a wrap-up question, could you tell me a bit about how you are educating your gorgeous little daughter language-wise? How are you dividing it? Because you have a lot of languages at home. So is she doing one language at school, one language at home, or a Saturday session of another language, or, you know, lots of people prefer to keep it one language until they're older? How are you feeling about it?
So that's a great question, because it was really a hot topic at our house for the moment. So my daughter, she's American, I mean, St. Lucia, she's Caribbean American from her father's side. So she speaks English with her father, only English. Then with me, she had started speaking to her in French, like going back to that language that I feel like have more resources to communicate as much emotional nuances, you know? And it takes a village. So I'm fortunate to have my mother who takes care of my daughter. At least she has her at least 1 or 2 hours daily. The deal was that she would do Kinyarwanda with her, introduce her to Kinyarwanda.
Amazing.
And then at school, my daughter is in Dutch, but I have to say I've changed my mind recently. It's too much. It's too much. So I've changed her from school, and I put her recently in a French school.
Okay.
Because I realized that, first of all, once the choice of putting her in Dutch was, I'm not sure what it was motivated by, because I have no clue if my daughter will need Dutch in the future that much, you know. I don't know why I'm, yeah, so, and she doesn't, having to speak only French with me and Dutch at school, I think I'm sacrificing, she doesn't have the tools to express those emotional nuances that happens at school to me, because she only has that. And then from home, she cannot merge both. Yeah. So I felt like I used to be like, oh, let's put your kids in as many languages as possible at once. Children have a brain that's just a sponge, and it will absorb everything. Now I think I changed my tune, and I think I want my daughter to, she'll be able to learn more languages later. Mm-hmm. But I think it's better to focus on that, on the Kinyarwanda from my mother's side, mean French, and to stick and English from her father. It's good enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's good enough. And then we'll see what else she can do later. Yes, it's already, I think so. And the world is evolving. So I was like, well, you're making a choice for her based on Belgium. But I don't believe the way our life is, I think, you know, even you don't know where you'll be living in 2 years. You know, you might decide to go living to, I don't know, Thailand or something. So, yeah, why stress on that? I think the most important thing is that she can have fun and communicate a range of things at an early age, so that she can bond with people. So,
Confidently, yeah. Happily, yeah. I'm trying to slip some English in with my goddaughter, and she goes, "Mais ma reine, je speak pas English."
Je speak pas English. That's cute. You know they do that.
Yeah.
My daughter also mixes so much. She'll do one sentence with 3 different words from different languages.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's the future. It's the diaspora future language, the Esperanto of the African diaspora.
I know.
It's going to be funny. But Murakoze Chane, merci beaucoup. Thank you so much. I've loved talking to you, and I'm really excited to be brainstorming, collaborating with you on future collaborations, either music to music, languages to music, all of the above. Thank you so much.
We are cousin now, eh?
I'll even learn some Kinyarwanda next year. Hey.
Wakozikunu mida.
What does that mean?
Wakozikunu mida. It means thank you for inviting me, and tuzongera ubutaha. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely.
And nkuri tukuri inyuma, nkuri inyuma. I'm behind you.
Hey. All I can say is murakoze cyane, but I'll say it again.
Now yeah, you can learn nahu butaha. Nahu butaha.
Nahu butaha.
Yeah, very good. Look butaha. At you.
That's like on est ensemble.
Nahu buta, no. Nahu buta means à bientôt, à la prochaine.
Ah, okay.
See you soon. Nahu on est ensemble, turi kumwe.
Turi.
Turi. Tu. Yeah. Us. Ri. Are. Kumwe.
Kumwe. Turi kumwe.
Kumwe. We are together. Nous sommes ensemble. Turi kumwe.
Turi kumwe.
Turi kumwe.
That.
Very good.
NG at the sound. Turi kumwe.
It's like, yeah, it's tough. It's in the throat. It's in the upper part of the palate, like right at the end, almost at the end of your palate. Kumge, mge. It happens at the back in the palate.
Mge.
Yeah, almost. Mge.
I'm gonna practice that. I'm gonna practice that before the next time.
That's one of the so few much. Sounds here that can be tricky, right? But once you got that, I think you got it already.
I'm gonna learn some. I'm gonna dive into some playlists and get my ears in tune. So thank you so much, and thank you to all listening to this podcast, and thank you to Beaux-Arts taking African languages seriously in 2021. We love to see it, and take care and speak soon.
Languages to music.